1. Close spatially. Temporary relations. Aspirants for rapprochement, rallying, unification. Convergent structural communications. 2. Integrative properties of the model. 3. Inductive thinking, from the private to the general, with a subsequent analysis of communities and the systematic division of them. 4. Ego, attraction, conformance, propensity to consolidate, to unify, unification, illegibility in relationships and relations, readiness to adhere to both, and this. Cram food by force, it also says.
Yes.
Yes, I often feel that when I'm eating. But I don't overfeed.
What does this mean? Head tilted forwards. Is that right?
Where?
I mean, under the declitum section. Convinced.
Which one's that?
I mean, the heading. Head tilted forward. The declitum heading.
Well, people have said that I have poor posture and my head does tilt forward. So I am a declitum. I have bad posture, basically.
I could just be shit sensing.
Yes.
It's also kind of convinced, you know, it's kind of like that posture. Declarative, you know, that, I mean, if you can kind of like imagine what that would mean bodily. One's assured, confident, head tilted forward. You know.
I have none of those adjectives.
Maybe you will be someday.
Time to subtype shift.
So what I think is interesting is close spatial temporal relations. That's a big part of her model. And I haven't really unraveled all of what that means. But that is pretty key. So it's the difference between distance spatial temporal models and close spatial temporal models.
That's an interesting thing to kind of say, because usually when I think of just the general description, not the differences between any minus or any positive, like any is just very divergent thinking. Like it doesn't like to converge so much. It just likes to open and open and open and open. But when I look probably at any declarative, it's probably like, this is the concept we should work on. And then any asking is more like, this is the concept we should explore. This is also can be true. Well, that can be true too. So I can kind of see what she means by convergent versus divergent here.
Yeah, and it's also related to the animus, which she said in one of her blogs. Her logos and eros, actually, not so much animus, they're a little bit different. Because the animus is, or the logos is not distinction, but it seeks integration. And eros is more about integration than seeks distinction, which is related to animus. And somehow related to this as well, but no one's really elaborated on that so much. But there is something there, I believe.
It's also interesting that irrespective of the cognitive style dichotomies, which are static, dynamic, positivist, negativist, and process results, declitums are here mentioned as proponents of inductive thinking, and their ego attitude is represented by unification and also integrative properties of the model. What do you think is going on here?
Well, I'm not quite sure. You know, on one hand, there's a bit of a difference between model that Strat follows and most socionics follow, which is the asking pairing model, and the one that we're more interested in, which is, you know, model G with the positive negatives. And they're related. And if you look down at a little bit further where she kind of breaks this down, she says something kind of weird in our thinking. The questioning model with its differentiating properties built in negatives from the aspect of plus and E, which just kind of ran there. Scheme rejection, which either complicates the hero to achieve the goal or force him to abandon it. And declarative, integrating model plus a positivist from the positive aspect of minus any reunification scheme. which simplifies a hero, the way to achieve the goal or approaching it. So I find this kind of model, this model kind of counterintuitive, where like any minus is, any plus is negativistic, and any minus is a positive function. But if you can kind of get beyond that, you can kind of see where she's going with this a bit. And I haven't really, I meant to do this before we started the podcast, and I'll kind of see how like asking types are at any minus or any plus in the ecosystem, and see, because obviously they don't all have it. See how that works, but.
It's also mentioned here, if you guys would like to scroll down, that the declatives easily give in to the general opinion, mood, and sensation. They do not like to stay in the minority. And they easily submit and subordinate, which in turn could be correlated with aristocratic and democratic.
Declaratives have no spine, is what she is saying.
Yes, they're convinced of the spine that they don't have.
That they often look smug, so I think that fits.
From her description,
the declarative types.
Yep. There's also another interesting thing, that from oneself and from others requires complete completion of work, a thorough elaboration of the form, which leaves no ambiguity.
Who translated this? Or is that how she actually wrote it?
This was translated from Microsoft Word translator, which is not as good.
Oh, no wonder.
Yeah, that's why it's on Word, you know. This is from an infographic, which is really difficult to translate, and I think James here would do it and he's going to change. Because I always have to like do it my way around some question. But you get the kind of gist of it.
Stratioskaya that declaratives. 15. There is a predisposition to hypertension. Well, that doesn't bode well for my health. Yay, bad sensing.
Well, that's because you cram food down your throat, you know?
So moving on to questions, who are characterized as doubting, as opposed to the declatives, who were characterized as convinced. So their external difference would be difference? Appearance? Okay. Would be a surprised look and a head thrown back with a chin up. So, number one, far space-time
quite
relations.
Quite a model.
Yeah, quite a model. So, number one, far space-time relations, striving for separation, splitting divergent structural ties. Number two, differentiating properties of the model. Number three, deductive thinking from the general to the particular, with the subsequent analysis of particulars and the systematic generalizations of them. And finally, the ego is characterized as rejection. Finicky, intelligibility, rejection, detachment, rejection of objects, rejection of calls for integration, habituation and reconciliation with what is disgusting and unacceptable. The soul does not accept, it drives away from the soul. Do not feed me what I do not eat. That seems more like a declarative statement, considering declaring SI.
I think you notice that as well. You know, don't feed me what I don't eat. It's very much true for me.
I think as an asking type, I would agree with this, with it as well. Why do you think that there is an unwillingness to unite? Why there is a constant search for differences and reasons for separation and incompatibility?
I'm not sure. I think it's kind of, it feels kind of inborn. There's just this sort of otherness. And I don't know if you've read McGilchrist's book, I finally finished it today. Not sure. But the declarative brain, which I'm going to say the left brain, is more or less not identical with, but associated with. It sees the other, and the right brain, which is more asking, you know, it's going to have a relationship to the other as well. It seems like it's more introverted. It's like, I don't know how to describe this, but like, the doubt is there, the quest. It compares itself to the other, where kind of negatively. Like if you read the description, it that sounds really threatening. And players are kind of, they sound bad because they sound like they're kind of horrible and mindless, but you know. Both kind of sound like, well, that's not a good place to be. I think it has to do something with like how information is passed from the rare hemisphere to the left hemisphere to the right by dealing. And with quests, they start with the right and the left. And there's just some sort of breakdown there.
Initial thoughts is that there probably is a reason why your duel is going to be the other half. For example, if you are declarative, then your duel is going to be an asking type. It's probably because the declarative will probably do something first, and the asking will probably pick it apart. It's probably one is going to start off with something, or the opposite. For example, the declarative doesn't want to do something first because it doesn't have enough certainty to go ahead and do it first. So therefore, it has to wait for its second or third ball, and it needs information. And the asking type will be like, well, what if we did this and this and that and this and that and this? And then from that, there is some kind of certainty that can be bridged, or they can go ahead and be like, oh, okay, one of these ideas is good. An example that I probably can use is a lot of the times Jeremy goes ahead and he comes back and has a bunch of these different ideas, and then I pick one of them and I'll be like, yeah, that's the one that we should work on, or like, yeah, that's the idea that we should do. Like, he would be like, oh, we should have a podcast. Oh, we should do asking and declaring. Oh, we should go ahead and talk to these authors. And oh, we should translate all these kinds of stuff. We should have process results quotes. We should have this, that, and that. But he doesn't necessarily care whether we choose one of these projects, because they're all probably great projects that we can all do. And sometimes I don't know that's the right project we should do first, and I don't feel certain or I don't feel confident about it, so I don't start it. But if I see something that is great, like, I think it's great, I've declared that it's great, I think and I feel certain that that is probably the right direction we go, then I can go ahead and take it. Or I might be very confident for a long period of time, and then I feel very uncertain because I don't know what the next certain bouncing thing is. Or the asking and declaring, they don't mind to go ahead and give a bunch of things or watch and let the things kind of rain. Those are my thoughts. Also, it's easier for me to take charge when I know there's a lot of uncertainty in the room. Like, when a lot of people are waiting and, you know, maybe, like, not doing anything, I feel like I should do something. And it is a good time in those situations for me to rise up and to take even the little, least amount of certainty to go ahead and give other people that certainty.
You're a dominant subtype then, eh?
I don't think it's a dominant thing. I think it's probably a contacting thing.
You need to make the same association, though.
For me, if I feel like I want to say something, I'll say it even if someone else is saying another thing too. And if I don't feel like saying anything, I don't say anything even if no one else is saying anything. Probably ignoring or distancing too.
I can smell uncertainty from a mile away. Like, and I don't like it. I don't like people that are uncertain about the things that they talk about. Like, and I feel when I argue with a lot of asking types, they tend to throw in that uncertainty ball. Like, well, you don't know what you don't know. Or like, we haven't talked about this. Or what about if that? And I'm like, do you even actually know what the fuck you're saying? Like, did you really study the topic? Or you just kind of just like pull this out of your ass right now? Especially like the alpha NTPs. And when I get into discussions or huge arguments with them, they will pull shit out of their ass. And I know that they don't know what the fuck they're saying. And especially immature ones, I just can't, like, you haven't studied the topic. You don't know what you're talking about. You haven't gone to that extent. And it pisses me off, especially when I can't explain it. or when they go ahead and try to ask me back, and like they want to go ahead and have my explanation, where I can't use my TI declare, like I don't have TI declarative, I have TI asking, so I can't give them the proper argument that is strong, that is, and that is very confident. Like, I don't feel very confident in my arguments. I feel confident in my concepts. I see them. I know that they are there. Someone else has shown it to me. Someone that I've seen these concepts and these patterns in real life. I've seen it. I've used it. There's certainty in there. But if you ask me for an explanation or an argument, it's not going to be very certain. And I doubt myself a lot. A lot of the times, I'm not sure whether my argument good argument or not.
Do you think this is related to tertiary TE and it only has 2D strengths?
I think with tertiary TE, my tertiary TE is still declarative. So I will often be wrong, even though I want to go ahead and make things more change in external output. Like if, let's say, hey guys, we should go ahead and, hey, I'm going to go ahead and do the Twitter thing tomorrow. Or, hey, Readlight, I'm going to go ahead and send you the podcast and I'll edit it. Or, hey, I'll do something because that's probably the thing I should be doing. And, oh, this is a priority. Yeah, I will go ahead and email that person tomorrow, Jeremy. Don't worry about it. Like, I'll say it and I might be very certain, and then other people might believe that I'll do it, but then I don't actually go do it. Like, if you ask me, like, oh, did you do that thing? Like, no, I didn't do that thing. Like, oh, did you go ahead and edit those podcasts for me to do? Like, you know, we're waiting for you. Like, I thought you were going to do it. Like, no, I didn't do it. But I sound very certain that I'm going to do it.
I say a lot of things to hide the fact that I'm lazy.
Huh.
Two more points from asking types, the second of which will, which probably links to Talanov's system, the first point being, with seeming purposefulness, it is characteristic to strive to distance or deviate from the goal at the last moment, the desire to put a new barrier between the asking types and the goal. Taking in mind initial terminal, Jeremy, what do you think about this one, being an asking type?
With seeming purposefulness, is to strive to distance or deviate from the goal at the last moment. Desire to put new barriers to myself and the goal. Yeah, I can kind of see that. Just that doubt that's inherent in being asking type. It's kind of difficult for me because I'm a terminal type as well. So I do really try to finish where I start or not start at all. And also has results type as well, and strategic. Yeah, so yeah, I will totally deviate from the goal of the last one. I have no problem with that, really. And it doesn't cause me distress. It's like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. Yeah. I'm going to totally do this, but then, yeah, the last one, I've taken that little asking external environmental cues, and I'm like, eh, no, this doesn't feel right. I'm going to go do the totally opposite thing that I want to do. It's kind of embarrassing, maybe, and kind of, it seems kind of weird that you can just like, oh, okay, I'm driven, I'm doing this, and like, or not, you know, it's maybe it's MBTI E thing. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what makes being a quest type kind of erotic, because, you know, if you're being in the goal at the last moment, and you're close to your profile, would suggest that you try to reach your goal, being results and strategic and camera. It's like, well, what are you doing? Why do you just like crack out on this all of a sudden? This is kind of what.
Yeah, I think it's going to be exacerbated with the MBTI P types, which are actually initial irrational types, while the J types would be the terminal rational types. Okay, then point number 17, which will link us to Talanov. Rarely pleased with yourself, he tries to be or look self-critical. I think I would agree with that as an asking type, although I'm not so sure what the effect of the ego and the superego would be and how it would emulate the same thing. In Talonov's system, this is correlated with QI, but we'll get to that in a moment.